'Tis the season of making the perfect wish list and the perfect playlist with Bose Quiet Comfort Ultra Earbuds and Headphones. Breakthrough immersive audio uses spatialized sound to bring your fave holiday classics to life. And world-class noise cancellation ensures a not-so-typical silent night and an epic holiday party of one. It's everything music should make you feel, taken to new holiday highs. Visit Bose.com/iHeart this holiday season and shop sound that's more than just a present.
Have you heard about VYVGART, efgartigimod alpha fcab? Ask your neurologist if VYVGART could be right for you and learn more at VYVGART.com/learn. That's VYVGART.com/learn. Brought to you by Argenix.
When something happens to your kitchen, you might say,
"This is ludicrous."
But that won't fix your home. That will only get you the rapper, Ludacris.
Having trouble? Don't panic. Don't be alarmed. You need to file a claim? Holla at State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
That's right. You can file a claim on the app or call us.
Thanks, Mr. Chris.
No matter how ludicrous the situation, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
State Farm, Bloomington, Illinois.
And we continue with our American stories. America's fascination with mob boss Al Capone is a century old. Here to tell the story is the biographer of the definitive work on Capone, Lawrence Burgreen. Let's take a listen.
Al Capone is, of course, America's most notorious and famous, celebrated outlaw and criminal. Not only in the United States, but in many countries around the world. Capone is particularly popular in countries like Japan and Eastern Europe, but his legend is ubiquitous. And he's one of these very popular figures who emerged in the 1920s, who became iconic. Charles Lindbergh, the aviator, was another. He was really different because as I got into Capone, I discovered that it was like peeling an onion. And there was a lot to say about him. He never sought to become a gangster. He came off as a very soft-spoken. He seemed to be more like a banker than a gunman. And I think that was part of the reason for his success. But again, it was all accidental. He was born in 1899 in Brooklyn, New York. His family was from Naples. His father was a barber. His mother was a seamstress. He had 7 siblings, all brothers except for one sister, Mafalda, whom apparently everybody was terrified of. They were here in Brooklyn like so many other immigrants. Every year, almost 50,000 Italian immigrants arrived in this country in the year of his birth. That's a huge number. And that's just from Italy, and they encountered a great deal of prejudice. Italians were not very popular for hiring, and it was difficult for them to make their way in this country. So they were often hard up, looking for work. There were various reasons for that. Part of it was the fact that they were Italian. Part of it was the fact that they were Catholic. There was, at that time, a strong anti-Catholic prejudice. So the odds were stacked against them. You may wonder, well, why did people like the Capone family even come here to the United States? It's because of the old story. They came here for opportunity because things were even worse where they came from. Naples in southern Italy was very poor, and the prospects were, you know, not great. And here, so the myth ran, the streets were paved with gold. Capone came of age here. The school records show that he was an indifferent student in Brooklyn and left school as soon as he could and had various odd jobs around. He was known as being diligent. He was not a child robber or anything like that. What changed everything was Prohibition. And Prohibition, just to remind you, became the law of the land in the early 1920s when it outlawed all the consumption of liquor. It was an example of the tyranny of the minority, perhaps. Alcoholism was seen to be a big social evil that led to the deterioration of morality, the destruction of families, and a lot of crime. And so alcohol was demonized. Well, Congress passed a law, and it was outlawed. However, just passing a law doesn't make it so. And in this case, it had the opposite effect. It backfired. What it did was it put a huge segment of the population, which was used to drinking alcohol, not because they were alcoholics, but because that was part of their daily life, and made them outlaws. They didn't really think they had done anything wrong. It was normal to drink wine or beer or something similar. Suddenly, they were demonized and could get into very serious trouble. Well, that also gave rise to a whole underground economy of liquor production and consumption, and what I call the Trinity of Vice, which was booze, gambling, and then that went along with it, prostitution. And because it was secret or semi-secret, it made it harder to prosecute. You know, they say sunlight is the best disinfectant, but this turned off the sunlight. Also, Capone, of course, was Catholic, and a large part of the country was Catholic. They felt discriminated against because wine was part of the Holy Sacrament and communion. And suddenly, their wine was illegal, and they felt this was discrimination against Catholics. Capone, again, was not really into this kind of crime. However, by accident, some family members and some friends of the family pulled him into small-time criminal activities such as betting and things like that. And Capone himself then began to see an opportunity. He left New York. He went to Philadelphia. He became the protege of a more sophisticated criminal named Johnny Torrio, who saw the possibilities of an underground or secret criminal organization based on this prohibition, which had suddenly given the rackets, as it was sometimes called, a gift of making what they were doing illegal. So Capone became involved in the importing of alcohol, often from Canada and from other places in the Caribbean, and in rum. And, you know, it's seen as now, you know, very colorful activity. It was that, but it was also led to a great deal of danger. Capone was very good at doing this, at organizing this. He discovered a gift for arranging deliveries, finding places to conceal alcohol, and to form alliances with other gangs and people who were doing the same sort of thing. Especially, some were Polish, some were Jewish. They also became famous or notorious. And again, this was not his first choice. His first choice was to be an accountant, and I'm not joking. Instead, he found himself married with a child and then several children. And he also became suddenly more successful than anybody ever imagined. Now, he was very young. He was still in his 20s. And by the time he was in his late 20s, he had gone to Chicago, where Johnny Torrio had summoned him. And he became the most powerful person in Chicago, which at the time was the second most important city in the United States. This was incredible. You say, how could this happen? Well, it happened for two reasons. One was prohibition, and the other one was that the Chicago infrastructure, law enforcement, and government was extremely corrupt, and prohibition had undermined it even more. So Capone and others like him were able to capitalize on it, and because they were making so much money, they were able to bribe politicians, and that way they were able to control politicians. You may ask, what about the government? What about the federal government? Well, they were very slow to get into the act. The federal government felt they had nothing to do with this. J. Edgar Hoover eventually became head of the FBI. It was only when the St. Valentine's Day massacre came to his attention that Hoover and other people began to wonder and worry about it. The St. Valentine's Day Massacre, which was on February 14th, 1927, should have been, in the normal course of things, a minor dust-up in Chicago. Instead, it led to the deaths of several people, and it suddenly made the front page of newspapers all around, and people realized for the first time that there was either a crime problem or a violence problem or a gun problem because of the machine guns that were involved. And suddenly, outlaws and gangsters and what they represented became a topic of urgent national concern.
And you're listening to Lawrence Berggren tell one heck of a story about Al Capone, the family's migration from Naples to seek a better life, and finding themselves in Brooklyn, Italian and Catholic, and not loved because they were Italian and because of Catholic discrimination in America at the time. 50,000 Italian immigrants arriving annually in this country. And what happens next is just a story of, well, just accident and serendipity. Prohibition driving everything. And of course, the government thinking they were going to stop a problem, and if anything, probably exacerbating it. And there in the center of it was this guy, Al Capone, with an organizing talent, a distribution talent, and we'll learn about some of his other talents when we come back here on Our American Stories.
We get our weekly groceries delivered through Instacart because once football season starts, game time is family time. I can get everything my family needs for the week, from reliable staples to specialty ingredients, all delivered right to my door in as fast as 1 hour. So I can stay on my game without missing a minute of the game. Visit Instacart.com or download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Minimum order $10. Additional terms apply. Instacart. Add life to cart.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
How's your money feeling? It's about to feel happier with a certificate from Happy Money's partner, Alliant Credit Union. Elevate and increase your savings with 12-month terms and only a $1,000 minimum. And the happiest part? Alliant certificates yield 5.25% APY annual percentage yield. Now that's a happier side of money. Elevate your savings. Go to happymoney.com/Alliant. That's A-L-L-I-A-N-T. Funds insured up to $250,000 by NCUA.
The APY is accurate as of the 11/1/2023 dividend declaration date. Early withdrawal penalties do apply. Fees may reduce earnings on the account. Any monthly withdrawals or transfers reduce earnings.
And we continue with Our American Stories and with Lawrence Berggren, author of Capone, The Man and the Era. Let's pick up where we last left off.
The FBI was playing catch-up when J. Edgar Hoover first heard about Al Capone. His initial reaction was, who's that? He had never heard of him. Well, eventually they found out. And it was difficult to prosecute them. It was difficult to get people to testify against Al Capone and other people for two reasons. First of all, in Chicago, he had made himself into sort of a local hero, if that's the way to put it. He was very clever. He kind of worked both sides of this. On the one hand, he was exploiting prohibition and selling alcohol and related activities. On the other hand, he ran the equivalent of a soup kitchen and gave a lot away to charity. He was a Robin Hood figure, robbing from the rich and giving to the poor. There was no such thing as welfare in those days. So the state, you know, federal government, was much, much weaker. That left a vacuum for Capone and others to fill, and so they did. Now, Capone wasn't the only one doing this. There were Irish gangsters, there were Jewish gangsters, there were Polish gangsters, and on, you get the idea. But he became the most visible because he was articulate, he was very well-spoken, he didn't shun the limelight like some others did. Now, when you think of the visual image of Capone, you think of a hulking man. In fact, the reality was somewhat different. He was always extremely well-dressed. He wore a fedora. He wore a tie. He wanted to be and looked like a banker rather than a gangster. He did not go around with machine guns or pistols. Eventually, he hired some gunmen or guards to do that for him. But he was known as more of a broker and businessman than anything else. When I was researching this book, I got to know a number of Capone family members who lived in the area and in the Midwest, especially around Lansing, Michigan, where he spent some summers. Two things were striking. First of all, none of them was any kind of outlaw. This was not like The Godfather, where they were a generational dynasty. They had all moved on to other things. They were doctors. They were lawyers. They were in the military, generals. They were homemakers and things like that. And they didn't really want any association with the stigma of the name Capone. So that was very striking. The other thing that was striking was that they all remembered when I asked them the inevitable question, what was Al really like? They all pretty much had the same thing to say, that he was very considerate, soft-spoken, not violent, did not seem like the kind of gangster that you saw on TV, and was a valued family member. Of course, his victims were dead, might have had a different story. And, you know, there were other sides to the Al Capone story, but that was the impression he made on those who spent a lot of time with him. At that time, syphilis, venereal disease, was a major scourge. I also did a lot of research on syphilis, and it's sort of like the common cold in the sense that it's very common, and it's, as they say, self-healing 90% of the time. So if you get it, 90% of the time, it actually goes away on its own. 10% of the time, it doesn't. Capone was in the unlucky 10%. When he visited some brothels or prostitutes, he acquired it. It went underground, as syphilis can do, became neurosyphilis. He was unaware of the fact that he had it. For example, one of his brothers, or at least one, had it, but it just went away on its own and didn't affect the brother at all. But it was like a time bomb, if you will, lodged in Capone's nervous system that at one point was going to explode. People noticed a change in Capone's behavior as he was getting into his 30s. I think you maybe remember the movie The Untouchables with the very, very explosive, compelling performance showing Capone's temper.
What? They got the shipment.
What?
They got the whole shipment.
I want him dead. I want him dead. I'm dead.
Did with this
what
shipment.
Am I alone in this world? Did I ask you what you're trying to do?
Please.
I want you to find this Nancy boy, Elliot Ness. I want him dead. I want his family dead. I want his house burnt to the ground.
And the famous scene that sounds like it was made up where he suddenly blew a stack. And when two people were threatening him, he took a baseball bat and bashed their heads out.
I get nowhere unless the team wins.
Team.
This seemed very unlike the Al Capone that anybody ever met. However, that incident really happened. Well, what changed? The answer is neurosyphilis had violently distorted his behavior. By the way, the cure, of course, for syphilis has been for a long time, ever since World War II, penicillin or something related to that. But that did not exist at that point. The cures that were around were things like mercury, which was basically poison, or other ineffective cures. So there was no medicinal cure for it. So people didn't know or understand why Capone had become suddenly out of control, but in fact, he did. Eventually, the government found a way to catch up with him. And that wasn't through his murders or violence. It was through the fact that he didn't pay taxes. If you were a criminal and you had a huge income that was off the books, you were not going to report it. You know that. You made $1 million from illegal activities. So the government eventually put together a case that didn't have to do with people associated with Capone violence. It was simply the fact that he didn't pay his taxes. That was also an argument that they felt rightly that they could get a jury to understand, because everybody had to pay taxes. They could relate to it. It was sort of simple, in the sense basic rather, although it didn't seem as horrible as his other indiscretions and activities with which he was linked. This was one that the ordinary potential juror could get a hold of and understand. Now, it was actually tough to get a jury to sit down on a case involving Capone and other gangsters, because in those days, newspapers published the names and addresses and sometimes even the photographs of jurors. And when I say addresses, I mean home addresses. Well, if this was a dangerous case and you were dealing with dangerous people, you were very reluctant to serve on a jury. So that also, because it was something, it sounded rather mundane, not paying taxes, they were able to find some jurors to do that. So Capone became the kind of test case. Could they convict a gangster for violating prohibition-related activities on this basis? And the answer with Capone was yes. At first, he was sent to federal penitentiary in Atlanta, and then he was moved to a brand new federal prison made for so-called super criminals that had just opened, called Alcatraz. Notorious Alcatraz.
And you're listening to Lawrence Berggren, author of Capone, The Man and the Era. What a story he's telling, and what an image he's casting. We can almost see Capone. And we also understand why he wanted to be seen as he was seen, as a banker, not as a mobster. The fedora, the suit and tie. And then comes syphilis, this scourge that most recovered from, but not Capone. And this led to the change in his behavior. Neurosyphilis had that ability. And then came, of course, the prosecution for tax evasion and his journey to jail, first in Georgia and then to Alcatraz. When we come back, more of Lawrence Berggren, more of Al Capone's story here on Our American Stories.
Let's face it, most people aren't making massive turkey feasts on the regular. And after 364 days of not thinking about it, it can be hard to get that bird just right. That's where Instacart, the holiday rescue app, comes in. From getting all the ingredients to prep a full seasonal spread to getting last-minute swaps in a turkey emergency, Instacart has everything a holiday host needs to save face and save dinner. And right now, if you download Instacart, you get free delivery on your first three orders and delivery in as fast as 1 hour. Offer valid for a limited time. $10 minimum per order. Additional terms apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Extra cash? Coming right up. Happy Money is letting you in on a happier way to elevate your savings with an incredible certificate offered by Alliant Credit Union. Smart, bold, and straightforward. Alliant offers a 12-month certificate with 5.25 APY annual percentage yield with a low minimum deposit of $1,000. Funds are insured up to $250,000. Best of all, anyone can apply to join. Elevate your savings today. Visit happymoney.com/Alliant. That's Alliant.
The APY is accurate as of the 11/1/2023 dividend declaration date. Early withdrawal penalties do apply. Fees may reduce earnings on the account. Any monthly withdrawals or transfers reduce earnings.
And we continue with Our American Stories, and we're telling the story of Al Capone. Here again is author Lawrence Berggren.
Before Capone, there was no Alcatraz. You didn't have these kinds of, you know, super prisons. There was no federal prison system at that point. But now there was, as the government was becoming more sophisticated and bureaucratized. And he was one of the first people sent there. Now, he was only in his late 30s when he went. And he was already then the most notorious, best-known criminal, not only in the United States, but in the world. There had been tons of news reports about him. There were movies being made about his life. And so he had become famous at a very young age. If Capone hadn't had syphilis. It's really difficult to imagine what would have happened, because he probably just would have kept going and going, unless somebody actually assassinated him, which was a constant problem. Anyway, he went to Alcatraz, and that was helpful for people wanting to know about him, because the Bureau of Prisons made an effort to keep detailed medical records about Capone and other prisoners. So that's how we wound up knowing about his medical condition and other facts about his life and family. Also, by the time he got there, the neurosyphilis emerged, which is what happens. It follows a pattern, and then it becomes more and more predominant. It's like an infection that suddenly breaks out and takes over your body. Again, there was no penicillin. And within the space of not many months, he began to exhibit signs of dementia. You might want to call it senility. And it was pretty extreme. His irrational outbursts kind of faded away, and instead he was reduced to not comprehending what was going on in the world, to seeming that he was walking through a dream, to reverting to almost childlike behavior, which was kind of grotesque. Other prisoners in Alcatraz wanted to take advantage of him, stamp him, pick on him, or something like that. The guards tried to keep him safe. He eventually died of the effects of neurosyphilis in 1947. By then, he had been sent out of prison. He was living in Miami, and again, in a fog of dementia. Nobody really knew what to do with him. Once World War II started, he seemed like a relic from another era. The difference between the early 1920s or the Roaring Twenties and then the Depression and then the beginning of World War II made Capone seem like something, you know, from long ago and far away. Also, Prohibition was repealed eventually when FDR was elected. So there were some lingering traces of the illegal economy that Prohibition had given rise to. But in general, it was different now. It was a different world. So you couldn't really have another Capone. But, you know, by then, the idea of gangs, organized gangs of different kinds, had become pretty entrenched in American society and, you know, has become embedded in our culture and in a kind of a folklore. And Capone now has become a symbol of lawlessness and sort of a Robin Hood syndrome. Also, some of the people around him have also become famous. I'm thinking particularly of Elliot Ness, who was in the movie The Untouchables and also the TV show. Elliot Ness is popularly portrayed as Al Capone's nemesis, the lawman who finally got Capone.
Your Honor, we would like to withdraw our plea of not guilty and enter a plea of guilty.
Favor, Your Honor!
Never stop. Never stop fighting till the fight is done.
What do you say? What do you say?
I said never stop fighting till the fight is done.
What?
You heard me, Capone. It's over.
Get out. You're nothing but a lot of talking to bed.
Here endeth the lesson.
You're a lot of talking to bed. You're nothing but a lot of talking to bed.
Well, Elliot Ness, in reality, didn't have much to do with putting Capone in jail or getting him convicted. The real Elliot Ness was charming, loved the limelight, was sort of hapless, ironically enough became an alcoholic in later life, and was not really considered a major player in these events. So how did this happen? He had a ghostwriter, a collaborator, who wrote a book about his adventures. This ghostwriter was named Oscar Fraley, F-R-A-L-E-Y. And this book, which actually wasn't even that popular at that time, glorified Elliot Ness and attributed all sorts of daring do and heroic activities to him, which were wild exaggerations. The book itself was fairly popular and seemed to be overdone, to put it mildly. However, when the TV show in the 60s, early 60s came along, it used the name Untouchables and the Oscar Fraley book as the source material. And all the episodes tended to be highly fictionalized. And Robert Stack, who played the part, you know, was very convincing. So the folklore wound up supplanting the reality, which sometimes happens. though people didn't realize that the real Elliot Ness hadn't had that much to do with Capone. He had then gotten involved in politics. He had run unsuccessfully for mayor in Cleveland. His political career was derailed there because he was involved in a car accident because he was drinking too much, ironically enough. And so that was the real Elliot Ness, was not that particularly admirable or effective. But, you know, that's what happens with myth-making. It sometimes really takes off from a reality and then, you know, goes off into a whole different direction. As for Capone, he died in 1947 at a young age, and then he was buried. And, you know, people were surprised to hear that by that time that Al Capone was still alive because, as I said, he had belonged to a figure from another era. So, in a sense, there's two Al Capones. There's the reality of what he did in his life. Then there's the legend, which goes on and on and on and is still influential. Almost any country, if you go and you mention Al Capone, people know who you're talking about. It's both troubling but understandable because Robin Hood type outlaws have an appeal, and his years of fame, which were 10 or 12 years, he really, you know, made a huge impression. He liked the limelight. He gave a lot of interviews, so he made himself into a celebrity in the 1920s because of that. So that's why we hear about the name Al Capone. We don't hear about the name Johnny Torrio or Jake Guzik or other lesser-known gangsters who were in some ways more powerful or just as dangerous or menacing as Capone. Anyway, his ability to promote himself left a lasting impression. Also, the 1920s was a time when publicity and public image and image-making really became an important element of American society, which continues to this day. And if Capone had lived in the era of the internet, I can only imagine what would have happened to his reputation. He would have become viral, 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 viral. There's no doubt about it. But he was the equivalent of viral as much as you could be in those days. And yet, he was a pretty private person. When he wasn't giving interviews, as I said, he often retreated to Lansing, Michigan, where he had some friends and some relatives who shielded him from the public and tried to live an ordinary life for as much as he could. The other thing about Capone was that he was very fond of music, especially jazz. And at that point, jazz musicians got their start essentially in nightclubs, and because of Prohibition, which they were more and more popular. So popular music, jazz especially, and gangster culture or the rackets, whatever you want to call it, kind of grew up together. So he inadvertently fostered what's now, you know, of course, a major, beloved American art form. So those are a few thoughts about Al Capone and the legend that he gave rise to.
And a terrific job on the production, editing, and storytelling by our own Greg Hengler. And a special thanks to Lawrence Berggren for sharing the story of Al Capone with us. His book, Capone, The Man and the Era, is available at Amazon or The Usual Suspects. Again, that's Capone, The Man and the Era. A terrific read, a terrific writer and storyteller. And telling a story about an age, because without Prohibition, there's probably not an Al Capone. And without Chicago, Chicago's location, as we learn from the great Chicago Fire, and Chicago's rise to become the second biggest city in America, had a lot to do with its location as a distribution point. And then his death and how syphilis just tore apart his mind and his body. By 1947, he's in Miami and in the fog of dementia and just, well, a shadow of the man he was. A product of the 1920s, of the jazz age, of Prohibition, and of the beginning of modern famedom. The story of Al Capone here on Our American Stories.
Thank you. 'Tis the season of making the perfect wish list and the perfect playlist with Bose Quiet Comfort Ultra earbuds and headphones. Breakthrough immersive audio uses spatialized sound to bring your fave holiday classics to life. And world-class noise cancellation ensures a not-so-typical silent night and an epic holiday party of one. It's everything music should make you feel, taken to new holiday highs. Visit Bose.com/iHeart this holiday season and shop sound that's more than just a present.
How's your money feeling? It's about to feel happier with a certificate from Happy Money's partner, Alliant Credit Union. Elevate and increase your savings with 12-month terms and only a $1,000 minimum. And the happiest part? Alliant certificates yield 5.25% APY annual percentage yield. Now that's a happier side of money. Elevate your savings. Go to happymoney.com/Alliant. That's A-L-L-I-A-N-T. Funds insured up to $250,000 by NCUA.
The APY is accurate as of the 11/1/2023 dividend declaration date. Early withdrawal penalties do apply. Fees may reduce earnings on the account. Any monthly withdrawals or transfers reduce earnings.
Crypto is like finance, but different. It's for everyone, everywhere, all the time. Kraken. See what crypto can be. Not investment advice. Crypto trading involves risk of loss. Cryptocurrency services are provided to U.S. and U.S. territory customers by Payward Ventures, Inc., DBA Kraken.